buzzer has sounded. We are headed to overtime with William Pattison on Fox Sports Knoxville. This is Fan Run Radio.
And here we go. Live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios, it's overtime with William Pattison, Dawson Wise, Jordan Moore joining us in studio on a Wednesday. Great conversations in the first hour. We'll continue them here in the second. 865-546-8200, your number if you want to hop in and join. But we begin with our First Things First, presented by the 37 Club, which provides access to unique content, exclusive events, private communities, and special discounts on Fan Run merchandise. Join on fanrunradio.com today. I promise it'll be worth it. And today's first hour topic, or I guess second hour first topic, I should say, the NFL rule changes. We were going to talk about them yesterday, ran out of time. So today we get the opportunity to break it down. And after taking a night to sleep on the discussions held on Monday over the proposed modified kickoff, the NFL owners on Tuesday voted to approve the change that league officials and coaches believe will return the play to relevance. 29 of the 32 owners voted in favor of the modifications, and it takes into effect this coming season, a year after only 22% of kickoffs in the 2023 season were returned. The modifications call for all players on the kicking team to line up at the receiving team's 40-yard line, while the receiving team lines 9 players up on its own 35. 2 men will line up downfield as returners. The kicker will still kick off from its own 35. The kickoff team's defenders won't be permitted to move until the ball lands on the ground in the quote-unquote landing zone inside the receiving team's 20-yard line. Now, if the ball lands short of the landing zone, the ball will be moved to the receiving team's 40-yard line, just as if a kickoff sails out of bounds. Touchbacks would call for the ball to be moved to the receiving team's 30-yard line. So this is a very similar style to what we've been seeing in the XFL. I know not too many people watch and keep up with that, but they tried it last year, seemed to have a lot more success and kind of rejuvenizing this play, the kickoff, which has kind of been dead in the NFL for a couple of years now. We have not seen those dynamic kick returns as much anymore. When you think back to the early 2010s and 2000s, you think of Percy Harvin, you think of Devin Hester, guys that could change a game with one play, being the kickoff, and you've really not seen a whole lot of that because now incentivizing the fair catch, they can call it in between the 25-yard line and get the ball at the 25, no real incentive to take it out, especially with the way these kickers can kick it. It's usually a touchback or a fair catch, really kind of a dead play. Now with these changes, it makes it to where the play is something to tune in for now. It's a play that could change a game a little bit more compared to what it's been. It's not really changing anything except just, you know, where the ball is going to be placed. So I am for it. I think it will look weird on TV. I think the aesthetic of it is going to look weird, especially when you pan to the game and you've got the kicker all the way down there and then all the teams are lined up. It's going to look a little weird, but I think the overall product is to try to make this play a meaningful play once again with safety in mind and everything else that has gone into why this play has been dead. Now you're kind of incentivizing, okay, take this thing out, because this gives you the opportunity to not only have a chance to get more yards, but for the kicking team, if it sails out of bounds, if it's a touchback, they're getting at the 30. If it goes out of bounds, they're getting at the 40. If it doesn't land in the landing zone, once again, you're getting the ball at the 30. So it incentivizes these kickers to kick it in the landing zone where these teams can make a play out of it. I am for that. I am for having more plays that are impactful in football. I do think the aesthetic and the way it's going to look will be weird, however. It's going to be something we have to adjust to, but I do think the play now has been rejuvenized.
Yeah, I see that. I'm still leaning against it. I'm old school when it comes to this. I prefer the old rules. I think the fair catch rule was bad. I think this is just weird. There's going to be too much going on.
Yeah.
Like, if you're trying to show someone football, and I'm not saying, you know, well, who hasn't watched football for the first time? If you're trying to show someone football and you show them this play and they're like, what is going on the kickoff? There's too much going on. I would Just I know why they're doing it, and I'm not disagreeing with why they're doing it. They're doing it for safety. They don't want to have these downhill, you know, helmet-to-helmet hits, these massive hits that we see on kickoffs, even at the college level too, and I get that. But, man, I just love the old system because it just wasn't very difficult. It was pretty straightforward. Everybody's lined up on one line. The receiving team's lined up on the other line. You kick it. If it's in the end zone, it's a touchback. If it's not, you have to return it. And that's just how it was. I get that they want to incentivize it now, but to me it feels like it puts the kicking team in a bit of a box. I mean, because your guys can't start running until this guy's hands are on the ball. He's able to get a bit of a running start where you're having to come from a dead stop from about 20 yards away. Whereas in the old system, you could wrap around that guy. You could make more of a play if you're the kicking team, not allow him to get out to the 30, 35-yard line. I feel like it puts him in a box now. It's also really complex, really weird, and there's just too much going on for me. So I'm against it personally. I know it's going to incentivize returning kickoffs, but I still – I'm just – it's too much. I wish they'd just go back to the old way.
Jordan?
Yeah, change is hard for me. It's still weird for me to look on the TV for extra point attempts and see how far back they're right. They kick it. You know, I'm more old school. I hate change. I hate rule changes. But I understand it. At the end of the day, they do need to make that play relevant because it was getting to the point to where, you know, why even have a kickoff team just spot the ball and let's start playing. So I do like the aspect of they're trying to make that play relevant and keep that play in the game. Another aspect, and I'll take just a little bit of a different angle too, because I'm kind of close to it with my kids, which is they're trying to make the game safer at the end of the day. You know, I have a friend who coaches Little League football here in East Tennessee, and they're having a hard time getting kids to come out to play football. Because parents, you know, are worried about the health effects. So anything to make the game safer. I'm the one on the couch screaming at the TV too when, you know, they throw a flag for barely touching a quarterback. You know, I am. But at the same time, if we want football to survive, then you're going to have to change the negative connotation with some of the plays that are in the game if you want the sport to survive. So I understand why they're doing it. I watched the XFL. I thought it was great. I liked it. So I'm not against what they're trying to do. It's just I'm against change, and I hate change. And I think it's going to be interesting and fun just to see how teams use that to their advantage. You know, how do they change their kickoff or kick return units? Do they put different type of players out there? I bet Cordell Patterson wishes this was still in the game, you know, that this was in there to where he could return to football because he would have crushed it. You know, teams could just kick it away from him, kick it through the back of the end zone, which cut down his chances on returns. But I like it. I'm fine with it.
Yeah, you know, I think that it's kind of an experiment this year. And I think what could change this is if we have, you know, a huge influx of kickoff returns, like, you know, for touchdowns or for big plays. I think maybe if that were to happen this year, we may see them revert and try a different thing next year because I don't think they're trying to make this play like, okay, every time there's a kickoff, there's going to be a big chance that there's a touchdown. I just think they're trying to see, okay, how can we make this dead play a little bit more modernized, a little bit more enticing for the viewer? But I think this year will be very interesting to see how it plays out because I really do think if they're a bunch of examples of teams just, you know, returning kickoffs left and right, I think that then waters down the game to where it's not really what the play is there. That's not what necessarily a kickoff is there for.
It's a little bit too extreme.
Yeah. So, and there weren't a ton of returns in the XFL this past year because I would watch a couple of those games. And I'm just talking about for the viewers, probably not a whole lot of people watched them. But it's not like they were returning kickoffs left and right. But at the same time, these are NFL caliber players and the best athletes in the world, you think that a couple of these guys are going to be able to turn the corner and break one loose. So I think it'll be interesting to see also how these teams play, you know, how their formations are after it's kicked. I know you can't move until it's received, but maybe you have guys dropping back to where you've got like a 5-4 setup for the kickoff team. Or a 5-5, you know, guys dropping back. It'll be very interesting to see how the coaches approach this as well. Now, another rule change. The NFL's competition committee achieved one of two major objectives of the offseason Monday when NFL owners voted at the annual league meetings to ban the swivel hip drop tackle, a technique that league officials have deemed a great threat to player safety. According to the agreed specific criteria of the now illegal technique, a swivel hip drop tackle takes place when a player grabs a runner with both hands slash arms while attempting to make a tackle, unweights himself by swiveling and dropping his hips and lower body, and then lands on and traps the runner's legs at or below the knee. And we've seen a lot of examples of these over the past couple of years, very dangerous plays that have taken out players for seasons. You know, these are very dangerous leg injuries that happen from these. And such a tackle will result in a 15-yard penalty and an automatic first down, according to the NFL, if a player brings his opponent to the ground by performing the first two steps but lands off to the side and without swiveling around and landing on the legs of the feet of landing on the legs or feet of his opponent, I should say, such a tackle would be deemed legal. The technique has become more popular in recent years as players look to avoid using their helmets in tackles, which draws penalties and increases the risk of concussions. So I think this is another rule that probably needed to be put in place. Now, there are a couple people online that are not fans of this because it eliminates another way to tackle a player, eliminates one of the responsibilities of a defender, and now makes their job a little bit harder. The way I look at it, over the last couple of years, the NFL has been moving more and more to siding with the offense. It's what makes, it's what sells tickets. It's what's enticing. People want to see offense. And they, as a result, have also made the game safer. The middle of the field now is so much more wide open. You don't see these Vontaze Burfict style hits anymore that are taking out players. So a lot of these rules are catering to the offense indirectly because they're trying to make the game safer. So I think this does hurt the defense. And now you've got to be more disciplined. You've got to be in a better position. You've got to, if you get beat, you can't run around and just, you know, swivel tackle someone anymore. So there are going to be a lot of techniques they're going to have to fix defensively. These specific teams will. But I think if it's for safety and it's to help better these players, I am for it. But I do see the outcry from fans that are saying you're taking away a football play, you're taking away the opportunity for these defenders to do their job. What are your thoughts, Dawson?
To me, the rule is fine in and of itself, and I think it's something, especially, and this wasn't in the NFL, but like the Jordan Travis injury last year on a hip drop tackle. I mean, really awful injury. So I understand the rule, and I agree with the rule. Where I had an issue is the example video, about a minute and a half long video the NFL kind of put out with this rule that showed some tackles that would now be theoretically called as hip drops. Some of them, to me, kind of look like just regular tackles.
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit too ambiguous in the video. I think the wording of the rule is fine, but the video made it way too ambiguous to me.
Yeah.
It makes it seem like a judgment call, like kind of like roughing the passer has become. Pass interference is a little bit different, but roughing the passer, defenseless receiver, you know, you kind of see somewhere, okay, well, it could have been called there and it wasn't. Well, you know, it couldn't have been called there, and they called it anyway.
Yeah.
I feel like this is going to kind of start to suffer from that as referees try to start to call this.
Sure.
And it's all because the example material, to me, a few of the tackles in that video, I mean, it just kind of looked normal to me. Again, we'll have to wait and see. The way the rule is worded, I think it's going to be a lot of a judgment call. And I did kind of play devil's advocate and said this does limit defenders more because they're having to already take their head out of a tackle because of the middle of the field rule, not being able to hit with their helmet anymore. They're already having to tackle a completely different way. That's, from what I understand, is the whole reason that these hip drop tackles even became as popular as they were is because the guys are having to pull their head back and having to lead with a different part of their body and drag a guy down with a different part of their body. So it takes away something for the defenders. Again, I get it for player safety. Makes a lot of sense. I'm just hoping it's called right, and it seems too ambiguous to be called right right now based on, you know, how all of it is worded and especially the example video because, man, that just confused me even more.
Yeah. Jordan?
Well, you know, I understand the rule. I understand the aspect of it. You know, I'm pretty sure, I think it was 2 years ago in the playoffs, you know, my running back for the Cowboys last year, Tony Pollard, that's how he broke his ankle.
Yes, yes.
You know, I think that's one of the examples there. It is definitely a dangerous play. Brew this year for us was almost the exact same thing.
Yep.
So I understand why they're trying to put this into the game, but to his point, though, outstanding point, which is how is it officiated? It's such a judgment call, you know? And it's kind of be like, you know, the quarterback roughing the passer. It's such a judgment call when you will or will not make that call. And I think that is what's going to be the outcry, the outroar of the season is – you know, especially late in the game, if a team's driving and you know, it may be a call that changes the outcome of a game or changes the complexion of a game, it's really going to get even louder. And it kind of goes to even more to the people who are saying just put flags on them because, you know, yeah, we are kind of regulating the game and regulating actual football out of football. But I kind of go back to the last point that I had too. You know, I'm a parent and, you know, I know someone who coaches Little League football, and the connotation with football, parents don't want their kids to have to deal with some of the injuries that are in the game of football. So the NFL is kind of, I think they're kind of looking at it, you know, not just the aspect of now, player safety now, but just, you know, the life of football, the game of football in the long run, trying to make the game safer as a whole. But it's going to be a judgment call at the end of the day. And, you know, they're going to be, sometimes they get it right, and there's going to be a lot of times that they get it wrong.
Yeah. Well, and quick funny note, just a quick side note that I saw. Somebody posted the still of the Titans-Rams Super Bowl tackle at the one-yard line.
Yes.
And said, if that had happened today, would it be called a hip drop tackle?
Yeah.
That's the kind of situations we're going to be dealing with late in these big games.
Yeah. You know, you can point back at that game. It'll be, and that would have been a funny way to end that Super Bowl. There's actually a 15-yard penalty. Once again, I think it's for player safety. It's to try to keep these guys off of the IR. Last year, we saw a ton of injuries to big time names, big time players, and not all of them. And it's not like this play specifically was keeping these guys off the field, but I think they're trying to make the game safer. They're trying to make it to where their stars are still able to play and can avoid situations like these. So I'm for both the rules. I think, you know, one of them in the kickoff is going to take some adjusting. I think the hip drop tackle is one of those things we have to adjust to as well. And even, you know, they've banned the blindside hits and the big-time helmet collisions. We still see them. So it's not like they're going away, but now they're just penalized.
Right.
You know, I just think it again, is trying to make this game safer, as Jordan talks about, for, you know, the younger generations trying to come up and play these games. A lot of people are concerned about the safety of football. By making these moves, I think it makes it a little bit more of an appealing product to even the younger generations as those that watch these games on Sundays. We've covered these rules. Are there any other rules that you wish were implemented? And this is one that I'm going to have, and it's a little far-fetched. It's not necessarily a rule that you can put in place, but we talked a little bit about this on Friday, Jordan, talking about all the technology we have in sports now, all these cameras, especially the NFL, so many cameras, so much technology. You know, drones and Amazon Prime doing the next gen stats, all this stuff. There's so much technology in football now, and I still question why we are still spotting the football with referees' eyes.
Yeah,
you know, we have all this technology in the world. You can't tell me that there can't be a little chip inside the football that can mark the exact spot and they can mark it
right there.
And I, you know, there have been multiple times we've watched games where there have been poor spots. You're like, you watch the replay and you're like, well, that's not the right spot. It's either way behind or way too in front. In 2024, I find it very hard that we are still using referees' judgment and their eyes in a very fast-paced play of knowing the exact spot. And they're very good at it. They're trained at it. But they're humans. There's human error, like we saw in the Kansas-Samford game. There's human error. They're going to miss things. And especially with a game like football, I don't think you should be struggling to have the exact spot of the football that take away the stupid bring out the chains and we got to measure it. You should know how to do it. I mean, in this day and age, I think there's enough technology to be able to do it correctly. So that'd be something I'd change. Just the technology and the spotting of the ball. I think, you know, we're too far technologically advanced to still be doing this.
Two things that I'm going to add to what you just said, because I completely agree with you, is the chip in the football. What, you know, my biggest pet peeve is when you have a goal line situation.
Oh, my gosh.
And it takes them like 2 years to
the bodies are on top of each other and they're trying to decide, how do we not have something there on the goal line with a chip that tells you if the ball got over or not? The second thing that I've had a big pet peeve on for a few years now is, why is it with the play clock running down, is it still the official has to look at the ball and look up at the clock to see if the clock zero? If we have a shot clock in basketball that has a big red light on the backboard and a buzzer that tells you, why can you not put a big red light on the field goal post or something that the official is just looking at? to see to be able to throw the flag, because there's so many times if we've seen games, the clock is at zero, and they have that split second of the official to look up to see or look down to see the ball, and the ball gets snapped when it should have been a delay of game. I know there's been a couple of times in Tennessee games over the years where it's hurt Tennessee in a situation where it could be a third and eight and it should be a delay of game, you know, 5 yard penalty. Well, they end up getting the first down on the third and eight because they let them run the play. You know, put a buzzer on their hip or something that tells them the clock has hit zero, so you're not giving them that extra split second to look at the clock, then look down at the ball to see if it's snapped.
A couple things for me. I wanted to see some more tweaks in roughing the passer. I think it's similar to what the hip drop tackle is going to be, just really ambiguous, where sometimes you're like, oh, that's roughing the passer by the new rule, and there's no flag. But then there's others you're like, really? Roughing the passer? I wish we tweaked that just to make it a little bit easier to call, so that, you know, we don't have all these discussions. So should this have been roughing the passer? Let's just get rid of that. And the second thing for me, I've been saying for a few years since they took it away, they brought in the review for pass interference and similar calls. I don't know why they went away from that. I know it takes time, but with the new rule coming out this past week that the replay assistant referee in the booth is going to be able to buzz down and help change calls, why can we not review those calls? I mean, soccer can review everything from that replay booth with that assistant referee. They have a whole referee dedicated to looking at every little thing that happens, and they can review every little thing. Why are we not doing that in football here in the NFL? We should be. I don't know why they ever took this rule away that you could maybe not challenge pass interference, but that it could be reviewed in a big spot, you know, a controversial call. Bring that back, especially with this new replay assistant referee.
Yeah.
Bring that back and let us review these calls. Pass interference, roughing the passer, things like that.
All right, great stuff. Anything else to add, guys?
No.
All right, let's take it to a break. When we come back, we'll talk about sports gambling and college basketball taking a hit. We had a conversation about it yesterday in the NBA. Now we had some news come out today. We'll break it down when we return on Overtime.
Fan Run Radio is proud to present the 37 Club, an exclusive community of the lifeblood of Fan Run Radio. You, our biggest supporters. With a membership to the 37 Club, you receive exclusive content like podcasts, blogs, and videos, giveaways, and access to exclusive merchandise and events. So join the 37 Club today by going to fanrunradio.com.
Are you ready to flash that dazzling smile? Well, look no further than Knoxville Smiles. Our experienced team is here to give you the care and attention you deserve. From routine checkups and cleanings to advanced cosmetic treatments, we've got you covered. Say goodbye to dental worries and hello to a confident, radiant smile. Don't wait any longer. Schedule your appointment today and unlock the power of your smile. Call 865-539-1776 to schedule your appointment today, or just visit KnoxvilleSmiles.com.
Rev up your savings at Volunteer Auto Group, your one-stop destination for quality vehicles at unbeatable prices. Cruise through their vast selection of pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. They've got the flexible financing options that make it easy for you to drive home today. Volunteer Auto Group, where every deal's a winner. 1501 Callahan Drive. Check them out online at volauto.com and tell them Fan Run sent you.
Are you tired of the same boring workouts that don't get you the results that you want? Check out HotWorks. With infrared light therapy and personalized wellness options, you'll be able to get the perfect workout every time. With the hot yoga or any of the other isometric options at HotWorks, you'll feel the detoxification right away. Hop on over to 10839 Hardin Valley Road or visit any of the other Knoxville locations to get started on your personalized journey.
A brand built in Tennessee and born from the love of the game. Inward Half revolutionizes golfing comfort. Crafted by a former pro and dedicated enthusiast just like you, our luxury performance wear guarantees you stay cool and comfortable through every swing and every day. We're not just a brand. We've set out to create a lifestyle for those who understand that impeccable style and premium performance are a hole-in-one. Enjoy the walk-in with Inward Half.
Are you ready to play hard and work harder? Are you looking to take the next step in your career with a company who celebrates hard work and appreciates those who do it? Then it's time to join the movement at Axel Logistics. Axel is looking to expand their award-winning sales team with logistics consultants who are outgoing, ambitious, and thrive in a fast-paced environment. If that sounds like you, visit axellogistics.com to learn more. Make sure you tell them you heard about it on Fan Run Radio. AXA Logistics, now is your time.
Back here on Overtime, hour number two on a Wednesday. We appreciate you listening along with us. Let's head to the phones, 865-546-8200. Your number if you want to hop in. We've got Westchester on the line. What's up, Westchester?
Good evening, gentlemen. Long time no talk. How we doing?
Doing well. Good to hear from you.
Thank you. Thank you. Hey, are you a hockey fan?
I am.
Dawson is. I'm not a big hockey guy, but Dawson is.
Can you? I got kind of a dumb blank question here. When did passing over the blue line from the neutral zone become legal?
What do you mean? Like you
when did when were you able to pass? Like the Flyers scored a goal yesterday against the Rangers. I was watching a highlight, and the pass initiated in the neutral zone, and the player was inside the blue line when he received the pass. I mean, he wasn't. You know, necessarily offsides, but that used to be offsides. You used to not be able to get, used to have to dump or carry, I thought.
They don't really call that anymore. As long as the puck's across the line before the guy skates or across the line, it you know, as long as he's not technically offsides when he receives the puck, it's no longer offsides.
Cool, cool. Guys, I've work has been kicking my butt the last couple of weeks. What y'all's, where are y'all on the balls in the Sweet 16? Are we at expectations for making it? Are we good? Do we have to win it? Should we win it?
Yeah, you know, I think you're at expectations to return to the Sweet 16, especially with the roster you have. I think this is the best group they've had since the Admiral Schofield and Grant Williams team that went to the Sweet 16 in 2019. This is the best team you've had. I think they should make it to the Elite Eight. I think that'd be the standard for the best team you've had maybe ever under Rick Barnes, a notch above what you were able to do in 2019. So they're right on pace for it right now. You know, a little bit of a scary one on Saturday wasn't particularly the prettiest, but you're able to find a way to win. You caused 17 turnovers for Texas. You tripled them up in points off turnovers, won the paint advantage. You did a lot of things really well defensively to win that one, despite shooting historically bad from the field. Now you match up with Creighton, and we dove into it in the first hour. Tennessee has an opportunity to take advantage of a couple of Creighton's weaknesses and attack this drop zone defense that Creighton bolsters. So, look, I think a win on Friday would be a really big one, probably Rick Barnes' biggest win at Tennessee, getting to the Elite Eight. And I think that would be a successful season from that point on. So I think they're on pace right now, right on par. I think winning on Friday would take it up another level.
You know how bad I want to beat Purdue.
Oh, my gosh, yes. I mean, and even, you know, getting past this Creighton game, a potential matchup, rematch with Purdue. You played them at the very beginning of the season. Now you get to face them at the end of the season. And I think Tennessee has improved the most out of those two teams. Purdue's been very similar. When Tennessee played them, Zakai Ziegler was still getting his feet under him, coming off that major injury. Don Kanecht wasn't the player we know who he is now. So I think you have a better shot to play him. And come tournament time at Westchester, they don't blow the whistle like they did in the Maui Invitational, where these referees are still trying to figure out how to officiate again. I don't think Purdue will be getting 44 free throws this time, so that's also to your advantage.
Oh, man, there's I can't look away from that. Like, it's just, I don't think I would be as upset if Tennessee lost this game if it wasn't for the fact that I want that revenge so badly. Like, it's just, it's not fair. It's not fair to the team. It's not fair to the fans, you know, but, oh, that's hanging there waiting. Just like, you can't help but look at it. I mean, Creighton, If we can somehow find a way to stop them from shooting threes, we can beat them. I mean, that's literally their game. That's all they have.
Yep.
So I'm not. That's a beatable team, in my opinion. If you have a coach that's a Hall of Fame coach who's making $6 million a year that can figure out a game plan in 3 days to make that happen, then he is a Hall of Fame coach making $6 million a year. So yeah, he should be able to make that happen. I've always been known to be a little Barnes critical. But Yeah, I mean, there's people that argue that the Grant and Williams team was better than this, but at worst, this is the second best team in Tennessee history of my lifetime, you know? I mean, yeah. And I'm substantially older than you guys, and I can't believe that it's okay for our second best team not to at least make the Elite Eight. I think this is I hate to say must win,
yeah,
because we've already made it this far, but I'm sorry, guys. That's unfair. It's unfair. I'm a Negaball. That's fine. I'll take all I get, but this is arguably a must win. I mean,
yeah.
This is waste of talent, and we have no guarantees on the future. You know, I'm one of these idiots that has these high expectations. Like, a team like Tennessee should make the Sweet 16 each year. And I know there's arguments against that about the percentages and how, you know, how many teams play and matchups and all that crap. But man, if you're telling me Tennessee isn't one of the top 16 teams ranked in the, you know, in the top 25, I'm sorry. I can't wrap my head around logic as far as why we, you know, why it's okay for us to lose it. I'm just like, man, we're a two seed. Like, come on, this has got to be a winnable game. I mean, I know the fact that to be honest with you, this is how bad off I am with my battered ball syndrome. I'd rather have lost in the second round than make it here.
Well, yeah, I mean, I see where you're coming from there, but at the same time, you know, I think a loss in the round of 32 would have been a lot more detrimental. At least playing into the second weekend, I think, is an accomplishment. You know, a small accomplishment. Obviously, you know, the goal is not to play in the second weekend. It's the goal is to play in the Final Four. But I think that, you know, this team is, you know, probably your second best team of all time. And really, the metrics say this is the best team all time. When you look at the statistics from the Grant and Admiral team compared to this one, very similar numbers, a couple of ticks better with this team. So I think it's a must win on Friday. And really, every game at this point in the season's a must win because, you know, you lose, your season's over. But in terms of Tennessee's history and having the best team you've probably had in a very long time, I think it's a must-win to at least be one of the eight best teams at the end of the year. You've played like it all season long. Now it's time to put it into fruition.
Well, the good news about our tip-off is, bar overtime, we're one of the best nine teams, right?
I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
Because every other game's over besides us.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
But I appreciate you guys making me feel like I'm not a total idiot.
No, we appreciate your call. You're not an idiot. There are a lot of people that have some, you know, more outlandish thoughts and takes. And I don't think you're a Negaval or a Rick Barnes critic. I think we all have to be critical of Barnes and the team and Tennessee. You know, as fans and as people on the radio, that's what we have to do. We have to be critical and look at some certain things. Doesn't mean we don't like them. Doesn't mean we don't want them to succeed. We just have to be critical. And when you look at Rick Barnes' history, there are a lot of reasons to be critical. But now you have the opportunity against Creighton to advance to the Elite Eight and maybe beyond. A rematch with Purdue is something that I think a lot of Tennessee fans think they can pull off. So you've got an opportunity to play for a Final Four. Tennessee's never been to a Final Four.
I'm at this point right now where I almost don't want Rick to retire at the end of this year, because I don't want to lose the coaching battle to Candy, because I believe they've already got the best candidate on the market. So who are you going to get argument?
Yeah.
When we finally, you know, we let Barnes take the walk, but I don't know. I think Candy will be do pretty well with that guy. I think that's a pretty good hire for them. You know, Vanderbilt hasn't been Vanderbilt since they lost the SEC changed the coaching rules at Memorial, and they lost the home court advantage, because that was almost a guaranteed home game win every time for them, because
yeah,
the, you know, opponent couldn't coach their team. But guys, I'll get out of the way and make room, but thank you for what y'all do, and we love y'all, and y'all be good.
Thank you. You as well. Go Vols, and we appreciate you calling in, Westchester, as always. Good to hear from you. All right, let's move into sports gambling taking a hit today. Yesterday, Dawson and I had a conversation about Jonte Porter, Jonte Parlay, if you will, about his whereabouts on January 26th and March 20th before playing in a couple of games. We talked about how sports gambling is now becoming a little bit too big now, and a lot of it is because the leagues partner with these books, the companies broadcasting these games partner with these books. It's becoming a little bit overwhelming, and now with players like Shohei Ohtani getting involved with a gambling incident, now Jonte Porter being an NBA player getting in an incident, it continues to heighten and raise the question of, is this thing getting too big? And NCAA President Charlie Baker said today he wants a ban on prop bets in college sports. He said in a statement released today, quote, the NCAA is drawing the line on sports betting to protect student-athletes and to protect the integrity of the game. Great quote. Issues across the country these last several days show there is more work to be done, Baker said. Now, prop bets allow fans to bet on how many points or rebounds a player might have, or yards or touchdowns a football player might have, instead of in conjunction with a game's outcome or spread. Fans can bet on these outcomes of games, but in many of the 38 states where sports betting is legal, prop bets are not allowed in college sports. Just depends on where you live, what sites you use. Baker said he wants this extended to all states. Now, yesterday, we talked about the NBA announcing that Toronto Raptors center Jonte Porter was under investigation by the league for betting irregularities surrounding prop bets that involved Porter in two separate games. He left the game early with injuries, one of them being an eye injury, allowing bettors to cash in on multiple prop bets that made them the most profitable for bettors on that day, according to the media release by DraftKings. Now, this year in college basketball, we saw Loyola Maryland coach Tavares Hardy resigned earlier this month. After Loyola said it had removed a person from the program after it became aware of a gambling violation. And we've seen a couple other instances. Temple University basketball this year was flagged for unusual betting patterns surrounding a pair of their games. Alabama baseball, everyone remembers that story last year, flagged for activity surrounding that program and coach Brad Bohannon. And Bohannon was fired for that incident with gambling. So we talk about, you know, gambling yesterday. We bring it again today. But specifically this move to ban prop bets, would this be a good move for college basketball going forward?
I don't know. I want to say probably, just in terms of keeping players from doing it, keeping teams from doing it, which is ultimately, I think, what they want to do. Now, I know it doesn't sound like that. I know, you know, the way you read into what Baker said today, it's like, well, nobody should be able to do it. If you want to keep players and staffs from doing it, this is probably the right move. And I hate to be that guy to want to limit this. But if you want to stop it, I mean, at least try it, I think. Test it in college, perhaps. I mean, because in the pros, a little bit less susceptible to me in the pros for something like this to happen. Well, other than with Jonte Porter, apparently. But, you know, for usual professional players, this doesn't usually happen as much where we have these talks about, are they point shaving? Are they, you know, going out of games intentionally to hit on under bets? We don't have that a lot in the pros, save for a few examples. In college, maybe a little more susceptible to say, okay, you can cash in because of the lack of revenue, especially at some of the smaller programs. Maybe you test it there. Maybe it works. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know for sure, but it's at least maybe a step to keep some of these college guys, some of these college staffs from betting on games.
Yeah, I think once you made, you know, betting legal, that this was the slope that you were going to eventually get into, especially with college kids that, you know, want the money, need the money. Even with NIL, some of these kids, you know, even, I mean, adults are the same way. You can have all the money in the world, but sometimes it's never enough. And this was, you know, an easy way in their minds to be able to make some money, is to bet on themselves on these prop bets. And, you know, I understand what they're trying to do in this situation. And I kind of think it's the right thing to do, you know, with the prop bets in the situation. You know, save that for the pros. But, you know, it sucks as bettors because it gives you something to look forward to, something to bet, something to keep an eye on while you're watching the game. You know, since I started betting, it definitely garnered my interest into other games outside of Tennessee to tune in and to watch. But I think they had to do something because it's starting to really go down a slippery slope with more and more players, you know, being caught doing this type of thing.
And Jordan, you weren't here yesterday when Dawson and I had this conversation, so I want to hear your take on this. Do you think gambling is getting too big in sports overall, just even outside of college basketball?
Yeah, I think it's becoming, you know, a lot of what sports talk has kind of turned into. You can't really turn anything on or watch anything that they don't start bringing up, you know, the lines, the favorites, what to bet, what not to bet. I'm not, you know, a avid bettor. I don't bet every single day. I bet sparingly, but it's kind of turned hard. It's hard to turn anything on and it not be talked about in anything you listen to or anything that gets brought up. So I think it has become – it used to be kind of a niche thing, and now it's pretty much everywhere and everything you watch, everything you listen to. So yeah, I think it has started to kind of take over sports as a whole.
So, you know, thinking about these, you know, possible penalties, you know, Shohei Ohtani is involved with one right now. Jonte Porter is involved, and we've seen multiple, you know, college instances as well. You know, of Malik Nabers partaking and. Or no, not Malik Nabers. Kayshawn Boutte. Yeah, Kayshawn Boutte. Malik. But Kayshawn Boutte. You know, we saw his gambling log. He loves gambling. but we've seen a lot of examples of college players, professional players getting involved. What is an appropriate penalty for those that are partaking in gambling that have a direct involvement and effect in these games? You know, going forward, I think, you know, all at different levels, you know, NBA and college basketball, different levels to it. But what is an appropriate penalty that's going to lay the law down and try to prevent these people from continuing to do it?
I think the NFL's got it right now. I mean, you know, when Calvin Ridley got caught, they suspended him for a whole year. I mean, he had to miss an entire year of football, you know, all because he gambled on some games. So, probably a season, I think, is the way you really make it, you know, a message to say, hey, don't do this. We're going to take an entire season away from you if you do this. You know, I've heard if this whole Ohtani thing, you know, goes through and they find that there's evidence that that's what the MLB is going to do. It's going to be a season-long suspension. So, you know, that's probably where you want to put it. And if you get, you know, into some of these deeper scandals like Alabama baseball, again, you have to think about removing, you know, the people that might have been involved. Obviously, Bohannon gets fired. Loyola Maryland's coach resigns. You have to think about removing, you know, whoever's involved in that scandal, whoever's, you know, actively a part of it. But beyond that, for players, I think it's a season-long suspension.
Yeah, I mean, betting's not going anywhere. It's going to stay here. It's here to stay. So to kind of cut down on, you know, these things continuously to happen, I think you need to have tough, harsh penalties to make it a threat, make it harsh enough to where players, you know, they don't want to get caught, they don't want to do this type of thing. The 1 year suspension thing, you know, is interesting. You know, banning coaches, banning, you know, pro players or whatever you have to do, you know, from playing, you know, at all, coaching at all, could be a road that you go down. But I do think that there needs to be some kind of harsh, stiff penalties for players that get caught betting on games, betting on themselves, betting, you know, on their team in general, to try to cut down on some of this, of what's, you know, starting to happen. Because, like I said, more and more and more college players and pro players are getting caught doing this type of thing.
Yeah. I think the NFL's done a good job with it. As you mentioned, Dawson, Calvin Ridley was a – you know, that was a big player, a big-time player that was caught for this, and they didn't have any remorse. They suspended him for a season. And you've seen a couple of other players, like Isaiah Rodgers was one, who was a kick returner, punt returner, special teams guy for the Colts, suspended him as well. I think for college, and there hasn't been an example yet of a college player betting on himself or betting on a game, but, you know, I think that's a, you know, revoke a year of eligibility. And really, if you want to get ahead of the storm, go ahead and come out and say, if you were caught gambling on these games, gambling on yourself, you will lose a year of eligibility, no questions asked. And that really, I think, would make these guys think that, okay, you know, I'm here to play college basketball because I love it. And I've, you know, grew up doing it. This is my life. Do I want to take off a year of my life of playing college basketball to gamble on a game and maybe make a little side cash? So I think getting out in front of the storm is very important. I think I'd encourage leagues to do this as well, because we haven't really seen a matter like this from the NBA. And this Jonte Porter situation will be something to monitor. But I think overall, and as I said yesterday, I think the more and more you continue to associate and involve the sports books with these brands, with these leagues, it's going to be harder and harder to prevent things like this from happening. You know, if I'm the league, like in the NBA or the NFL, or even the NCAA with college football and college basketball, I don't want any of my broadcast or any of my commercials advertising these sports books, because it makes it look like I'm in this too. You know, I'm a part of this too. You know, everyone remembers last year, the San Francisco 49ers and Los Angeles Rams game. It's a 10-point game with 30 seconds left. The spread's 7.5. And the Rams kick a field goal down 10 with 30 seconds left. Meaningless field goal. It ends up going through, and the Rams cover the spread at 7. Everyone's thinking about that, and it was talked about for days. Is the NFL, you know, rigging these games based on where the money is, based on how many tickets are placed? And the only reason why people are thinking that is because the NFL, when you tune into these games in the commercial break, just because you missed the first half doesn't mean you can't get it on the action. You know, use code NFL150 to, you know, get $150 free. When they continue to surround themselves around these sports books, it's going to be fresh in the people's minds that are watching these games, and it's going to question the integrity of the game. And that's something I thought, you know, NCAA President Charlie Baker did a really good job talking about, saying that we want to protect the integrity of our games. If I'm Adam Silver, if I'm Roger Goodell, I want to protect the integrity of my game to where my viewers, the people that pay to come and watch these games, pay to watch these games on TV, I don't want them to have questions of what's going on behind the scenes. If it's rigged, if it's scripted, I don't want that in my league. And I think the more and more they revolve around these sports book and involve them in their sports and leagues, I think that gambling will continue to raise questions about the integrity of the sport. All right, when we come back, we'll talk about the basketball transfer portal is open for business at a really interesting time. And a lot of players have hit the portal. We'll dive into it when we return on Overtime.
Ever been the coach who realized the team's gear just wasn't up to par? Well, if I'm being honest, that was me. Just a downright irresponsible and plain bad coach. Then SM Athletics changed the game. I want you to picture this. I walk into their store, a coach with a vision. SM Athletics didn't just see a coach. They saw a team's potential. And they delivered custom uniforms so striking. Our team's spirit soared. From cutting-edge apparel to top-notch equipment, SM Athletics transformed our presence. No more unreliable online orders or envying the other team's style. SM Athletics stands for quality, design, and on-time delivery every time. Coaches, elevate your team with SM Athletics. Call 865-966-3434 or visit smathletics.com. Get the best for your team, delivered right and on time. So, elevate your team's game by contacting SM Athletics today.
I was afraid to cut the cord, but once I did, I couldn't believe it took so long to do it. Paying too much for my cable bill had become a bad habit. I either wasn't getting what I wanted or never knew where to find any of my favorite shows until it was too late. Plus, the prices just kept going up. Thankfully, I discovered a new way to watch, called Philo. For just $25 a month, I can catch all my favorite shows on networks like BET, MTV, and TLC. It even has Nickelodeon for my kids. I can watch anytime I want, anywhere I want. Plus, Philo lets me have up to 3 streams at once, so everyone can watch what they want at the same time. Throw in the unlimited DVR that saves all my favorites for up to a year, and this really is the best deal in TV. I just wish I hadn't waited so long. Sound too good to be true? Well, try it out for yourself, and you'll see why people who love TV love Philo. Go to philo.tv. That's philo.tv.
The first annual Fan Run Open is Saturday, April 20th at Williams Creek Par 3 Course. Proceeds will benefit the Boys and Girls Club of East Tennessee, Care Cuts, and Emerald Youth Sports. Sign up and compete with your team of 3-4 for the Fan Run Trophy or in our individual competitions, or hit it big by winning one of our door prizes. Hang out with the Fan Run crew and support our local community. To register your team or to become a sponsor, email us at fanrunradio@gmail.com or go to fanrunradio.com/shop.
Too soon, too far.
All right, back here on Overtime. Don't have a quick hitter for this one. I'm going to have to think about it. But all right, let's wrap up the show today talking about the basketball transfer portal. It is open for business. College basketball's transfer portal has really been open for a week now. And there are more than 900 men's Division I players who have entered so far. All this happens while there are still teams playing for games that matter. Teams must split time between their postseason runs and evaluating transfer portal options to avoid falling behind. The time period crunch is ridiculous for college players, for colleges and players as they try to figure out their futures. I think this is a poorly timed portal. I don't really understand it. There are teams in the tournament right now that have bigger fish to fry than talking to, I don't want to give any strays, but let's just say a mid-major star coming out and entering the portal. These guys are trying to win a national championship. They're not even thinking about next season yet. Now, for the teams that did not make the tournament or have already been knocked out, it's their opportunity to get a little bit ahead of the curve. I think it's an unfair advantage to the teams that have not had as successful season as the team still playing. I think I have no idea why it is. I really don't. I mean, I'm sure there's got to be a reasoning, but the portal shall not open until the buzzer sounds in Phoenix. I think it's very poorly timed. What do you say?
Oh, I agree, and it's twofold. Number one, the teams that are still in the tournament, again, like you said, an unfair advantage to the teams that have been knocked out because you're obviously, like you said, not going to go and multitask and take any attention away from your ultimate goal every year, which is to win a national championship, to go talk to someone coming into the portal that you might need next year. You don't even know at this point if you're on one of these teams what your roster is going to look like next year. For the most part, some teams, like Tennessee, we know Dalton Connect is leaving in the offseason. So maybe you have an idea of who you want to talk to, but you're not focused on that right now. You're not going to go talk to Dalton Connect's replacement while Dalton Connect is still playing star-level basketball in the NCAA tournament. So for those teams, it's very unfair. It's also unfair to the players on teams that are still in. Maybe the guys on the bench and aren't getting playing time to go and enter the portal. They're obviously not going to do it during the tournament because they could throw off their teams and because they don't want to leave a team that could potentially win a national championship. So it hurts those guys as well that want to enter the portal from these bigger teams that are still in the dance. It hurts them. It hurts the teams trying to get players for next year. It's a big mess, and it's way too early, in my opinion.
It's way too early for this to be going on in the most important month of the college basketball season. Reading Twitter, even just now, you're looking at guys hitting the portal currently as we speak, and they're talking about guys being on other teams' campuses, taking visits. Heard earlier today that Creighton had two guys on visits today. Creighton, who's getting ready to play in an Elite Eight game? It's just – it should not be this way. They should wait till the tournament is over and then open it up for a 30-day period. That gives these kids plenty enough time to make decisions. I'm pretty sure that the tournament ends before they have to make a decision on if they're staying or leaving in the NBA draft. They need to open this window after the NCAA tournament is over, the day after the national championship game. Open it up for 30 days, and that gives these coaches enough time to meet with their current roster to see who's leaving, who's staying, know what their needs may be in the portal, target people. As you're seeing right now, a lot of these guys who hit the portal, you're seeing a lot of these schools, Arkansas, a lot of other schools who are already out contacting all these kids, getting these kids on campus, and then – you look and, we know that Tennessee has needs for next season. We know they're going to need to pick up a couple of guys, but you don't kind of really see them linked directly to anybody because they're not focusing on that right now,
yeah,
which is putting them behind the eight ball and be able to fill certain needs and certain aspects of their roster for next season.
Yeah, so real quick before we wrap up, who are a couple players to keep an eye on for the Vols? We'll go around the table, just give one apiece. For me, it's going to be Terrence Edwards from James Madison, a guy that we talked about during the break. Tennessee's already in contact with him. Sun Belt Player of the Year for JMU last year, 17 points a night, 42.7% shooting from the field, 34% from three, 81% from the line. Played out of ball screens for the most part last year and thrived in those settings as kind of a supercharged Swiss Army knife for this Dukes team. Was able to be a playmaker, kind of a big guard, and was also able to take over in late game situations. Could spin to either side, get a shot to go. He's a really dynamic wing that I think would be a really good replacement for Dalton Connect.
I had two written down, but we've already talked about one of them. It's St. Thomas from Northern Colorado. Obviously, kind of like Dalton Knecht, same place. We've talked about him a lot. The one I'm going to go with is Jordan Sears, a shooting guard out of UT Martin. A little bit further under the radar, not necessarily a power-level basketball player, but 22 points a game, 5 rebounds per game, 4.5 assists per game. He's going to play your two position. He's a shooting guard, shoots 43% from the field, 43% from three, so he can score at both levels. He's a dynamic scorer. He can get to the rim and score. He can also score from outside, which you're going to need when Dalton Knecht leaves in the offseason.
Yeah.
But it also doesn't upstage Zakai Ziegler, who's going to be back next year playing the point guard position. You can have another guard to complement him a little bit and give you that more pure shooter. You also need to replace Santiago Vescovi. I think Jordan Sears would be a great option to do that, to do just that.
The name that I'll give is Kay Tyson from Belmont. He fits the body type and the mold of a Dalton Knecht that you've had this season, that you just got from Northern Colorado. Can slide into that, you know, that three spot perfectly. Does pretty much the same things that Dalton Knecht currently does for Tennessee. He averaged 16 points a game, right at 6 rebounds a game. Shot 46.5% from three this season, which is incredible. A really good free throw shooter. Rebounds the ball well. Can get his shot off and many different ways, can attack the rim, can finish around the rim. I think he's a perfect replacement for losing Dalton Knecht in this offense to keep this offense going the way it has been going this season.
Yeah, and he's a younger brother of Hunter Tyson, yes, who played for Clemson, now plays for the Denver Nuggets.
Yeah,
a rookie for them.
And he's from North Carolina, so right across the border there.
Yeah. So a couple of players to keep your eye on as the transfer portal continues to expand. Not great timing, but, you know, nothing you can do about it right now. I think they'll look to change it as we go forward. But, Jordan, we appreciate you joining us today, as always.
Thank you for having me back.
Yeah, of course. And we appreciate you listening along with us. We will be back tomorrow to get you ready for Tennessee and Creighton before we head off for Easter break. We'll see you tomorrow.
Ever been the coach who realized the team's gear just wasn't up to par? Well, if I'm being honest, that was me. Just a downright irresponsible and plain bad coach. Then, SMS.